Hello everyone and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host Mike Innes and in this episode I'll be kicking off a series of three pods taking a club by club look back at the compelling season just finished. Let's get straight into things, focusing today on the six northeasternmost teams in J3, starting with Vanarare Hachinohe. Pre-season, I spoke about how coach Masahiro Kuzuno had overseen some impressive squad building at Hachinohe, bringing in players like Nobuyuki Yamada and Masashi Kokubun from Blaublitz Akita in J2, strong J3 experience in Kordai Fuji and Koichi Miyao, and interesting players from the JFL in Aoi Sato and Ryusei Shimodo. Having finished third bottom in 2021, Vanarare appeared well placed to make a challenge for the top half. This is almost what transpired, but the route by which the club got there was less predictable. Vanarare began the season poorly, and by the time Kuzuno quit after a 3-0 home loss to Gainare Tottori in round 12, the team were second bottom in the standings, struggling for goals with the seldom prolific Yusei Kayanuma up front, and key attacking midfielder Corky Meyerzauer having succumbed to long-term injury. Kuzuno's replacement was Ryo Shigaki, who moved back to Japan from Thailand to take charge of a J-League club for the first time. Progress under the new coach was slow at first, although Hachinohe did scrape a 1-0 win at Matsumoto Yamaga in round 19, but Shigaki's team hit their stride in the final 10 games of the season when they boasted a record of 1-8 lost 2. Pod listener Marco4J asks, what changed? My view is that a switch to 4-4-2 enabled Yamada to impose himself in central midfield more easily, coupled with the introduction to the starting lineup of Ryusei Nose on the left. Nose is a quick, direct and creative player overlooked by Kuzuno, initially given minutes by Shigaki as a substitute, and who then played himself into the first team off the back of match-winning performances against the likes of AC Nagano Parseiro and FC Gifu. Marco4J goes on to ask if the team can be expected to continue along the same path, and that's more a question for a 2023 preview pod, but let's note the club have already announced Shigaki has stepped down, with Nobuhiro Ishizaki moving in to take charge. Ishizaki has bags of experience and in 2019 took Fujieda My FC to third, having ended the previous year 16th. More recently, though, he has arguably underachieved at Katare Toyama. All that's for next season, and for 2022, the fact that Nose was top scorer with 4 tells you where their problems lay, but a 10th place finish represents solid on-field improvement for Vanarare. Fans of Fukushima United would have been forgiven for approaching 2022 with trepidation. The club had overachieved to end up 5th the year before, but the sense was the departure of coach Yu Tokisaki and standout players Tokachi, Hayato Fukushima and Hiromu Kamada meant that would be difficult to equal, never mind better. Then there was the added pressure of prefectural neighbours Iwaki FC's arrival in the J-League with their high-profile sponsorship and burgeoning fanbase, casting the modest operation at Fukushima into sharp relief. The club's response was to appoint as coach former national team legend Toshihiro Hattori, who moved from the staff at Jubilo Iwata and brought with him big defender Shun Obu, other key arrivals being loanees Junya Takahashi up front and Hikaru Arai in attacking midfield. Six games in, and this was looking a genius move as Fukushima topped the table. Their rise to first place aided by a 5-0 win at Azul Claro Numazu, in which Obu, Takahashi and Arai all scored. But the downward slide began with a narrow round 8 loss in the first ever Fukushima J-League derby at home to Iwaki, and really for the rest of the year Hattori's team looked convincing only sporadically. Main forward Takahashi scored twice in the last 6 months of the season. Hiroki Higuchi was missing, presumed injured, for much of the time, his impact on the team greatly reduced compared to 2021, from when neither Kazuki Dohana or Shoki Nagano developed beyond promising. Fukushima concluded the year in 11th, roughly where they might have been expected to finish when the season began. Pod listener Gabriele Anello asks a big question about the club in 2022. Do we interpret Hattori's debut campaign as a positive or negative? While it was unlikely they could sustain their excellent start, I think the results Fukushima achieved in the opening rounds suggest they could have done better, but Hattori never found that form again. There are good players in the squad, and a good coach could have got more out of them, could have helped a young player to make a breakthrough as Nose did at Hachinohe. But at Fukushima, there's no player we can speak of in the same way. The club have already said Hattori will continue as coach, but after the season just ended, he very much has something to prove. Perhaps an extreme example, but Iwaki FC illustrates an important point about the health of the Japanese pyramid system, namely that, as a rule, clubs are now coming out of the JFL and moving into the J-League ready to be competitive, rather than merely make up the numbers. This is a positive not only for the clubs concerned. Tegevajaro Miyazaki and FC Imabari are other instances of clubs that have quickly established themselves as solid J3 contenders, but also for the overall structure of the league, with J3 functioning as a mechanism that makes the transition to professionalism much less of an existential jolt than was previously the case. In other words, if clubs can gain promotion from the JFL and then make a positive contribution to the on-the-field competitiveness of J3, this is a good thing. And in 2022, Iwaki certainly did that in what was their first ever J-League season. On the way to the title and immediate promotion to J2, Hiromasa Suguri's team won more games and scored more goals than anyone else, while also losing fewer games and conceding fewer goals. Iwaki finished 9 points ahead of their nearest challengers with a goal difference of plus 49. By any measure, they were the best team in the division, deserving of their success. How did Suguri do it? Throughout the season, he kept a simple 4-4-2 formation in which every player knew their job. Within that framework, there was some interchangeability, especially among the wide midfield players and forwards, but Iwaki's good luck with injuries, with one or two less fortunate exceptions, meant the core of the team was particularly stable. For instance, there are not many teams in the division in which the two central midfielders both started every game of the season. Eiji Miyamoto and captain Yuto Yamashita did exactly that. Suguri also brought in two rookies who made a huge impact. Rei Ieizumi from Ryutsu Keizai University at centre-back and Ryo Arita from Kokushikan University up front, both making the J3 best 11, Arita taking the top scorer crown and winning MVP. 16 starts, 15 substitute appearances, 17 goals. But the coach's main achievement was to get the team playing with a consistent level of intensity and aggression, something that's always been a challenge, dare I say it, across the J-League. In each match they played, Iwaki were up for the fight, making sure the opposition had to win the physical battle to have a chance of winning the game. J Football Analytics asks if Iwaki will be a competitive team in J2 next year. And while that will be something for the JTET boys to consider in their 2023 preview pods, there certainly were times when Iwaki looked a division better than their J3 opponents. YSCC Yokohama were a club who came into 2022 looking at a very difficult season. Having finished an impressive 8th the year before, one of the division's smallest clubs lost coach Yuki Stauff, who took with him to AC Nagano Paseiro three key first-team players in Yuma Funabashi, Hayato Ikegaya and Yuta Sato, while Kei Oshiro joined Ehime FC and Charles Nduka departed for FC Gifu. The coach and half the team gone. The new coach came from the staff at Gifu. Kenji Nakeda's approach, whether by design or of necessity, was to make a new team from existing squad members. Of the new arrivals, only centre-back Takuya Fujiwara from Gainare Tottori slotted straight into the starting 11. Perhaps not surprisingly then, Nakeda didn't last very long, picking up only 2 points from 9 games before leaving the club by the end of May. Enter Kei Hoshikawa, who followed Kagoshima United's Naoto Otake from management in the women's club game to J3, Hoshikawa having previously been coach at Inak Kobe Lionesses. Hoshikawa's first game at YSCC ended in their first victory of the season, 1-0 at Giramantz Kitakyushu, but this was immediately followed by 5 straight defeats. And although the new coach was able to bring about an improvement in results, spoiler alert, YSCC didn't climb off the bottom of the table until round 32. The defence remained a significant and unresolved problem, but 2 mid-season signings improved the team's link-up play, thereby enabling YSCC to eke out a few more narrow wins. Former Renofa Yamaguchi midfielder Shuntaro Koga joined after a spell playing local football in Australia. Loris Tinelli moved from the unlikely source of Racing FC Union Luxembourg. In round 26, Tinelli scored the J3 best goal of 2022 to give YSCC a vital 1-0 win at promotion-chasing Matsumoto, and the team closed out the season with further victories over the likes of FC Imabari and an in-form Hachinohe. Hoshikawa delivered for YSCC a 3rd bottom finish, which, considering they only gathered 8 points from the whole of the first half of the season, has to go down as a kind of success. Gab Anello asks if YSCC are my favourites for relegation, if demotion from J3 to the JFL is indeed introduced for the end of 2023. That's also a question for closer examination next year, but for now, I'll say I think there are likely to be weaker teams and that Hoshikawa looks to have given YSCC something to build on. Where to begin with a review of YSCC's Kanagawa neighbours SC Sagamihara in 2022? Well, I'll start by mentioning my preview, in which I talked about coach Takuya Takagi having put together a small but balanced squad that put them in with a chance of immediate promotion back to J2. Warning, if warning were needed for listeners to treat any opinions expressed on this pod with extreme caution. As with Kenji Nakeda, Takagi duly left the club in late May, by which time Sagamihara were already 12 points off the top 2. How did the front office seek to turn things around? They appointed Norihiro Satsukawa, promoted from the position of coach to Sagami Hana's under-18 side. He did manage to coax a first goal from winter signing veteran striker Takayuki Shunayama and also brought in on loan Takumi Kato, who for a brief period offered a level of urgency and commitment up front that few players in the division could match. But disastrously for Sagami Hana and for Kato, he ruptured his ACL and returned to parent club Shimizu S-Pulse for treatment and rehabilitation. Meanwhile, Satsukawa struggled to identify his strongest lineup, never fielding the same starting 11 in consecutive matches, confidence ebbing away from the players almost visibly. Without Kato, the only positive note was provided by 38-year-old Jungo Fujimoto, always a pleasure to watch with his touch and vision. But energy football, read one of the banners on display at the Gion Stadium, Sagami Hana, and this is not what the team produced. A hallmark of their play as the season unfolded being a kind of tepid uncertainty. The second half of the campaign yielded only one win and Sagami Hana sank further down the standings, hitting rock bottom with a lifeless defeat at Kitakyushu in round 32. Losses in both the subsequent fixtures meant that a year after playing in J2, Sagami Hana finished dead last in J3, a position with which Satsukawa and the club could not argue. Across the whole of the season, they were the poorest team in the division, and since then, they've embarked on a major clear-out, especially of the squad's underperforming veterans. Satsukawa has stepped down, replaced by former national team defender Kazuyuki Toda, about whom J Football Analytics asks if he will be the person to revive Sagami Hana. It's too soon to say, but Toda has extensive experience of university football coaching, and it's to the college sector the club are looking for new players, a raft of graduates having already signed as Sagami Hana aim to put 2022 firmly behind them. And finally for this episode, the footballing conundrum that is AC Nagano Parseiro. After the disappointment of a bottom-half finish in 2021, the club deserve credit for the progressive appointment as coach of Yuki Stauff from YSCC. As mentioned earlier, in making his squad at Parseiro, Stauff brought with him three YSCC players, but this was only part of a significant rebuilding project, which also saw the signing of Hiroki Yamamoto from Fagiano Okayama and the loan of Koki Harada from Kawasaki Frontale and Carlos Duke from FC Machida Zelvia. The large scale of the squad overhaul, however, yielded only small improvements in terms of results, as Nagano had to be content with an 8th-placed finish. A particular area of difficulty was the defence, where not only was Stauff unable to find the right formation or combination of players alongside mainstay Hayato Ikegaya, but Keita Yoshioka departed mid-season for Montedio Yamagata, with former Tochigi SC centre-back Daichi Inui later signed as a replacement. Yuma Funabashi had 2 lengthy spells out injured, and 2 goalkeepers suffered injuries within the first month of the season, necessitating the loan signing from Yokohama FC of Issei Oichi. Little wonder the team lacked defensive stability. Elsewhere, Hiroki Yamamoto recovered from early season injury to become the main striker and top scorer, ending the year with a hat-trick against FC Imabari, reward for his tireless hard work. Left midfielder Yuki Morikawa continued to be one of the division's top performing players in that position, meaning Carlos Duke was unlucky to see out most of the season as a substitute, despite catching the eye with his pace and directness when he did make an appearance. Reo Yamanaka emerged as one of J3's Rookies of the Year, a player to watch next season and a source of pride for Paseiro, having risen through the junior and youth team ranks before going to university. In the season preview pods, I suggested Nagano may be a decent bet to finish above their neighbours and great rivals Matsumoto. And although that isn't what happened in the end, Paseiro did pull in a crowd of more than 13,000 for the first ever J-League derby between the two teams. It's a rivalry which acts as a useful hook for both clubs as well as J3 in general. Gabanello asks if Nagano are ready for the next step in 2023, and as things stand, with Stauff staying on as coach, they look like a club that's heading in the right direction. In the next episode, I'll be looking back on the 2022 seasons for Matsumoto, Katare Toyama, Fujieda My FC, Azul Claro Numazu, FC Gifu, and Gainare Tottori. Questions welcomed on those clubs via the usual means. But with all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.